Just got off from work. It was awful late. I had to pass the cemetery gate. The sky was dark and the moon was bright. It was a very, very cold, cold night. I never thought I could see such a sight. A poor soul doing the dead man's stroll. That last line doesn't rhyme, I know. It's not the best lyric about death that I know, but it's one I do like. It's from a song, 1959. By a doo-wop quintet called the Ravels, accent on the second syllable. Kind of a story there. Song was written 66 years ago for the Halloween season of 1959. You listen to the recording, very spooky. Tower bells, maniacal laughter. The Ravels were a Philadelphia group who were hoping to chart nationally with this song. They never had a hit, trying to get a hit. They titled the song Dead Man's Stroll. Again, it's for Halloween. But they've gotten themselves a slot on American Bandstand. For those of you too young to remember, American Bandstand, it was a TV show. This was before the internet and YouTube, where bands could get their songs out in front of the people and promote them. It was pretty much the path to national exposure. But Dick Clark, the host of American Bandstand, objected to the dead man being in the title. So they had to change the title to Midnight Stroll. They still sang the lyric the same, but they changed the title. So that's the title on the record, even though manifestly the time of night doesn't enter into it. But that's interesting. Notice that. Dick Clark believed, possibly even rightly, he had his finger on the pulse of America and his instincts were good. Dick Clark believed, on the one hand, that the song was worth hearing, that people would like it. He was right about that. The song went to number 35 on the Billboard Hot 100 and stayed there for about a month. But on the other hand, the people wouldn't give it a listen, wouldn't buy the record if it had the words, "Dead Man," in the title. I don't know, but what he might have been right. There are those two poles, aren't there? On the one hand, we're kind of uncomfortable with the subject of death. We have all kinds of euphemisms for death and dying. Some of them are polite. When did he pass away? Some of them are humorous. Well, he kicked the bucket. Some of them are elaborate to the point of incomprehensibility. He departed to that mysterious country from whose bourne no traveler returns. We're not always comfortable with just saying he died. But on the other hand, so much poetry about death. We really want to talk about death in poetry, especially we want to talk about death, and not just a Halloween lyric from 1959. But just off the top of my head, thinking this week about stuff I'd had to read in high school, there's Do Not Go Gentle, Into That Good Night by Dylan Thomas, there's Lament for the Macarist by William Dunbar, there's To Be or Not to Be, that soliloquy from Hamlet, I could keep going. Of course, this isn't a poetry class, so I'm not going to quote from any of those, and you're welcome, but I could. Because the truth about us as human beings is that we want to talk about death, even though it makes us uncomfortable. And a way we do that is talking about it poetically. Our text this morning, after a fashion, is poetry about death. Maybe you noticed, or maybe you didn't, maybe you zoned out through it. But we read Ecclesiastes chapter 9, starting in verse 3. This is an evil. All that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Now, a word about Ecclesiastes here, because maybe you know about Ecclesiastes and maybe you don't. The book of Ecclesiastes is an Old Testament book, and we classify it as one of the poetry books, along with Job, Psalms, Proverbs, and Song of Songs. But Ecclesiastes is, in a way, the least poetic of the poetic books, because what it actually is a book of philosophy, sort of. This makes it sound boring. But what it actually is a book in which a very old man who has lived a long and mostly wise life faces squarely the fact that death is coming for him. He is going to die, which forces him to take stock and work through this question. Is there any transcendent meaning to be had in life, given that everything in life will inevitably end in death? That's it. That's the whole book. Now, I can give you the answer that Ecclesiastes comes to. That's his name, by the way, the name that the writer uses for himself in the book. We remember, of course, that since this is an Old Testament book, he was originally writing in Hebrew. We read it in translation. I hope you remember that. And in Hebrew, he called himself Koheleth. That was the word. It means one who speaks to an assembly. Ecclesiastes is the Greco-Latin form of that. In English, we sometimes just call him the preacher. He's an old preacher addressing his congregation for, it might be, the last time. And the preacher says, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that the same event happens to all. Now, a little philosophical housekeeping, if you please, before we proceed with our text this morning. When the preacher says, under the sun, that is some technical language. When he says under the sun, what he wants you to understand is, I'm just thinking about this world. Human life on planet Earth, under the sun, boxed off from anything outside. What we can know from just the natural world and our own experiences, our own shared experience of life here. And when he says, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, he's not saying like this is naughty or this is wicked. He's saying this is bad. This is a very bad thing about life here on planet Earth that we all don't like about how it goes. And what is it? What's got him so irritated that he's like, this is an evil in all that is done? All that is done? Yes. What is it? The same event happens to all. And what's the event he's talking about? He's talking about death. We're talking about death this morning. This is the third sermon in a five-part sermon series called Sugar Skulls. For those of you who are like, I don't know what a sugar skull is, it's a thing you decorate for Day of the Dead. Day of the Dead is coming, you know. It's 2 weeks away. More formally known in the ancient calendar of the church as All Souls Day. And we will have souls in this series. We will have souls and graves and bones and death. Today, we have death. Ecclesiastes is thinking about death under the sun. When he says, this is an evil in all that is done under the sun, the same event happens to all, what he's thinking about is death. Now, not just death, you understand. He's thinking about consequences. The consequences of a good life versus a bad life. You know, in the New Testament, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus talks about the same thing, that the same event happens to all. But he uses this as this idea, as evidence that God is loving. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. Jesus says, we can tell that the Father in heaven is loving because the same event happens to all. God sends the same sun to rise for the evil and the good. God sends the same rain to fall for people of justice and people of injustice. He doesn't withhold the rain from the unjust. He doesn't blot out the sun for the evil. The same event for everybody. But you can almost hear Ecclesiastes saying, hold on a minute. And this is one of the reasons I love the Bible, because it's a very, on the one hand, but also on the other hand, kind of book. And you could almost hear Ecclesiastes saying, not so fast. Never mind Jesus for a minute, which is a bonkers thing to say, I know. But remember, under the sun, Jesus has special inside information. He has supernatural revelation. For Ecclesiastes, the acid test is death. And under the sun, it's an evil in all that's done. That's his position. But now you have to understand that this position is the culmination of rumination. What I mean is that this is the latest in a sequence of thoughts that began in the previous chapter. That's one of the problems with reading Ecclesiastes, is the thought isn't just ever confined to one chapter. What starts the preacher thinking about this is specifically the death of the wicked. I don't know whose funeral he had just been to, but he thinks, well, that's at least something. The things that man did deserve death, and he died. Good. And I can imagine some of us, there are some funerals that either you've been to or are anticipating going to, that would be your thought. He deserved to die. He died. Good. That's the thought the preacher is having. But then he interrupts himself. Then I saw the wicked buried. They used to go in and out. Rachel. They used to go in and out of the holy place and were praised in the city where they had done such things. This also is vanity. Now, when Ecclesiastes says says vanity, this is almost technical language, like his phrase under the sun. He means something specific. Vanity is his word for pointlessness, or he might say meaninglessness. So the wicked died. He'd seen it multiple times. They got what they deserved, but ultimately it doesn't mean anything. It's pointless. Well, why, Mr. Preacher Man? Why is that? Why is it pointless? Well, because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily. The heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. See, death as a punishment for wickedness has this as its problem, that it loses its effectiveness as a punishment in that the wicked person commits the wickedness and doesn't immediately drop down dead. So the connection isn't obvious. That's a problem. It's the problem that goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 2. Do you remember Genesis 2? Everything goes back to Genesis. God had told our first ancestors, Adam and Eve, you may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you shall not eat. For in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. And you remember what happened? They did eat of it, and they didn't immediately drop down dead. Which is bad, because that means nobody learned a lesson. But it's good, because otherwise there wouldn't have been anyone left to learn a lesson. And we could do a whole theological lesson about the differences among one, spiritual death, which is what they did experience immediately, and two, physical death, which followed eventually, and three, what we might call punitive death, which is what Ecclesiastes is talking about, which is the lightning bolt from the sky, or whatever. Because the sentence against an evil deed is not executed speedily, the heart of the children of man is fully set to do evil. See, that's his first thought. The decoupling problem, we could call it. Punitive death is not coupled properly. It doesn't follow wickedness immediately. And while we might be glad about that, I know I am, that punitive death doesn't immediately follow on wickedness. But then people feel like they're getting away with it. But then Ecclesiastes has a second thought. It's worse than that. There is a vanity that takes place on earth that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked, and there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. I said, this also is vanity. I love how he's like, I said what I said. Because Ecclesiastes is, in a sense, critiquing God's creation, at the very least, if not the way God runs things. It's a little breathtaking. But he's right. It doesn't make sense. Sometimes righteous people die young. Sometimes wicked people live to a ripe old age. And probably each of you can call to mind some tragic death, far too young, of some godly person. Or equally likely, you can think of some terrible old person or persons who it just feels like they're never going to die. Maybe you have a list that if you were in charge, bzzzt. But then Ecclesiastes has a third thought. Wait up, because eventually everybody dies. And it doesn't seem like you can affect the outcome. Oh, sure, there are certain wicked excesses that you can avoid. Maybe you'll live a little bit longer. And there's certain good practices that tend to extend life. But there aren't any guarantees. Ecclesiastes says, but all this I laid to heart, examining it all, how the righteous and the wise and their deeds are in the hand of God. Whether it is love or hate, man does not know. Both are before him. He says, you can try to be righteous, you can try to be wise, but God holds the final card. And you just don't know. You don't know what you're going to get. I don't think our friend Ecclesiastes was the same kind of preacher as I am. But as a preacher for 3.5 decades, I have done so many funerals that, I mean, after a while, you begin to see the pattern that there is just no pattern. Dressed in a top hat, cane and all, must have been going to a dead man's ball. May not believe it, but it has to be told. Poor soul doing the dead man's stroll. It doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter how rich or fancy or stylish you are. It doesn't matter how many vegetables you eat. It doesn't matter how much you give to charity. It is the same for all, since the same event happens to the righteous and the wicked, to the good and the evil, to the clean and the unclean, to him who sacrifices and him who does not sacrifice. As the good one is, so is the sinner. And he who swears is as he who shuns an oath. And it's the story of the human race. It's our story. And you can change the name on the song all you want, but you're still doing the dead man's stroll. Every one of us. And now we're actually ready to hear our text. Because Ecclesiastes says, and this is his third thought, it's even worse. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun. The same event happens to all. Also, the hearts of the children of man are full of evil. Madness is in their hearts while they live. And after that, they go to the dead. You see what he's saying? The fact that the same event happens to all, that there doesn't seem to be a cause and effect between goodness and life or badness and death, that actually is one of the things that promotes evil. That's what he's saying. That's what he means when he says the hearts of the children of man are full of evil. Because they don't see that it makes any difference. So why be good? And then he says, and madness is in their hearts while they live, which is a poetic way of saying it's enough to drive you crazy. You try to read the horoscope, you try to read the tea leaves, you buy some crystals, you burn the candle of the seven African powers or whatever. You try to discern some idea of how to live, and you can't. You're evil and crazy, and then you die. Nodded his head with a finger he led. I wasn't sure there was nothing to dread. We went on strolling for miles and miles just before I realized the time had passed when I was cold. I was now doing the dead man's stroll. It's not the best poem I know about death, but I like it because it says what I'm talking about. We're all of us doing the dead man's stroll right now. And it's worth thinking about while we still have time to think about it. As Ecclesiastes says, but he who is joined with all the living has hope. For a living dog is better than a dead lion. I mean, you get that, right? For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Now, if you're a Christian, you're not used to thinking like this, which is a good thing, by the way. But it is worth hearing this morning and learning a little bit to think like this, because if this life is all there is, if under the sun is all there is, then that's all there is. And it is terrifying how quickly the memory of those who were once alive and now dead, how quickly that memory perishes. You know, this church is 126 years old. And I challenge virtually any member of this congregation present this morning to name one founding member of Second Christian Church. There may be two people here this morning who could do it. Maybe. And if reward is only in this life, only, as Ecclesiastes would say, under the sun, they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. Their love and their hate and their envy have already perished, and forever they have no more share in all that is done under the sun. Now that is grim, huh? And here's where it gets really interesting. And I get profoundly moved every time I'm here. Just emotionally, it gets me. And I will just tell you, I love the book of Ecclesiastes because of this. Because the preacher looks this idea square in the face. He looks the sugar skull square in its face, and he doesn't blink. And he says, if all this is true, even if this is all there is, leaving out anything other than what's under the sun, what should I do? How should I live? Okay, what's your advice, Mr. Preacher Man? And he writes a little poem about it. And how does it go? Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Now that is a lot to unpack. And just a bit of theological housekeeping before we do unpack it. When Ecclesiastes says Sheol, what he means is where the dead go, wherever that is. See, The Hebrew word, Sheol, is their word for what they knew for sure, what little they knew about the afterlife. Which, when you understand that it's related to the Hebrew verb to ask, tells you a lot. It's basically question mark. It's basically, just a shrug, because we don't know. Now, as Christians, we believe, we hope, we listen to the teachings of Jesus and the New Testament, and we trust. But let me just tell you, we walk by faith, not by sight. And I'll have more to say, a lot more about what we as Christians can believe about death and eternity next week. But this week, I want to just spend a little time with what Ecclesiastes says this morning. Because it's good advice in the face of his three truths. And it only gets better if you have your hope set in Jesus. He says, go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Now that is a very bold statement. God has already approved what you do. But you have to understand his frame of mind and what he's getting at. When he says approve, he doesn't mean like God thinks everything you do is right. What he's saying is, you're too uptight. If you're able to do it, it's already in God's plan, and the proof of that is he's letting you do it. And I mean, sure, you can take that to all kinds of dark serial killer type places, but that's not what Ecclesiastes is saying. He's saying that a thing that death can't stop unless you let it is joy in the present moment. Eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart. And you have to understand, in the world that Ecclesiastes is in, bread and wine were a way of talking about the food of the poorest people. If you were the poorest of the poor, it might be that all you had for a meal was bread and wine. That was the bare minimum. It was on every table at every meal, bread and wine. But he's saying, even if that's all you have, if all you have is just bread and wine, you can have it as an old sourpuss, or you can have it with joy and a merry heart. Joy is a choice. So don't let the thought of future death ruin right now. This is a sermon, by the way, it may sound a little self-helpy, but this is a sermon particularly for my anxious, depressed, distracted, distorted, non-neurotypical people. All of my folk who are struggling with mental health and mental difference, all of my people who just are having a really hard time. This is the first thing he says, is just don't let the awfulness of the future steal your joy of the now. He says, let your garments always be white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. And I love this, because understand what he's saying. He's talking about laundry and hair care, which sounds trivial. It's not. Understand what he's saying. You can choose joy, and you can choose self-care. That's a choice. Did you know that was in the Bible? That's in the Bible. You can mope about the universality of death and the inevitability of death and consequently the profound injustice of universal inevitable death, or you can make sure that your hair is fixed and your clothes are clean. You can take care of basic hygiene and maybe remove that level of misery from your life. He says, enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that he has given you under the sun. Be because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Now, he is envisioning his audience as primarily married men, because that's who could read and had time to read the kind of thing he was writing. But do you see what he's saying? You can mope about death, or you can prioritize your relationships. Do you get that? You can choose misery, or you can choose joy and extend that joy into your relationships. And you have to realize, folk, if you are choosing misery, you're probably extending that misery into the lives of the people around you. Nobody chooses misery in isolation. And by the way, I love how Ecclesiastes comedically says, all the days of your vain life that he's given you under the sun. That's funnier than y'all are laughing at it. Because, yes, you can moan, but life is so pointless. But Ecclesiastes says, maybe so. Still a gift. And I would say maybe that is the point. If nothing else, if life is a gift, maybe the point is treating it like it's a gift. If nothing else, when someone gives you a gift, it's rude not to be thankful. And you see what he's doing. Even if we consider just life under the sun, which we Christians don't believe we have to do, but even if we just consider life under the sun, there are choices. And you can choose to be miserable, or you can choose not to be miserable. You can choose joy. You can choose fun. You can choose self-care. You can choose relationships. Which is what Ecclesiastes is talking about in the final stanza when he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you are going. Do you get it? You can choose to do good works. You can choose to think good thoughts. You can choose to know things instead of just being ignorant all the time. Again. You can choose to be wise and make good decisions. Look, you have choices to make and things to do in this life. And this life is when you have to do them. And even though the New Testament knows more than Ecclesiastes about these things, that idea still remains. It's still a New Testament idea. Jesus put it this way. We must work the works of him who sent me. While it is day, night is coming when no one can work. This is what our friend Ecclesiastes is saying. You can look at the universality and inevitability and consequent seeming unfairness of death, and you can let it drive you crazy. Or you can see it as a limitation and let that limitation goad you. There's only so much time for joy and health in this life. Choose to prioritize joy and health. There's only so much time for relationships in this life. Choose to prioritize relationships. There's only so much time for good works and learning and wise choices in this life. So choose to prioritize good works and learning and wisdom. Like it or not, you are doing the dead man's straw right now. And who knows how much longer any one of us has to do it. As a Christian, I would say the most important wise choice you can make in this life is to follow Jesus and to put your faith in him for the next life. I just want to challenge you this morning to prioritize that wise choice. Let's pray. God, how difficult it is to prioritize these things sometimes when we are anxious, when we are depressed, when we find ourselves in the midst of distraction and distortion. And Father, my prayer this morning is that you will enable us to see all of the good choices that we can make, the wise choices that we can make in this life. And in the power of your Spirit, Lord, make the decisions that you would have us make. We pray it in Jesus' name, for his sake.